to Deborah.
Sage advice from a gospel singer and blues singer, Lurie Bell. Don't let the devil drive. Says if you let him drive, you basically have lost your car. He'll take it wherever he wants to take it. It's, of course, a lesson in life. Don't let people who do not mean you well have charge of your life. So it's from his 2012 album, The Devil Ain't Got No Music, which also features Billy Branch and Joe Louis Walker, who back him up on his acoustic guitar. Well, a lot of things are happening, and yet I don't know, because we don't know the details. We're not informed. And frankly, I'm beginning to believe that Donald Trump is being situated by the powers that be to resign, rather than allow himself to be impeached. I think that's what Nancy Pelosi's plan is, to get him to resign. Because, in a sense, it's more humiliating, and it would save a lot of time. There are so many charges yet to pursue with Donald Trump, criminal charges to pursue. And it's going to take a long time before they gel, because they first have to investigate. And that's a long, long process. That would take years. So I think what they're trying to do, this is just my thinking. I could be wrong as all get out, but I think they're trying to press him into a situation where, even to his warped mind, resignation is not a bad idea. He has all these cases outstanding, and they're very serious cases. And they're not the kinds of cases where nothing will happen. Serious things would happen if he is found to have committed these transgressions and crimes. So where he is now, this is just my thinking. I have no real rationale for it, except the one I'm giving you now, that the country would be saved a great deal of grief and inconvenience and shame. Donald Trump is accustomed to ratting his people out, throwing them under the bus left and right. He's good at that. So he would be asked to continue that. And they will find him, you know, they put it to him, look, we have enough goods on you to send you away for many years, on top of the shame, which Trump is said to be terrified of, the shame of having his resume record that he was impeached. He doesn't want it. Bad for the resume. But you look at a number of cases that are fulminating, that are waiting in the wings, and they're queued up. And these are not simple cases. These are very serious cases. And it could mean jail time. So I think, this is my thinking, I could be wrong, and we'll see if I'm wrong or not. But I think they're trying to nudge him into acceptance of surrender. Give it up. We've got you on all of these counts. If you were to go to trial, and you most certainly will be found guilty. You notice in the news, they're highlighting the caliber of testimony and the caliber of testifiers that they're getting. People, they make a point to say that these are high caliber people, a long history, all of them, each has a long history of unreproachable work. You know, they have a long record of service, quality service to the country and so forth. This doesn't sound good for Trump. So I'm thinking that what they're trying to do is they'll take a couple of the cases that are most glaring, in which they have Trump dead in the water. He can't move. He can't defend himself against the charges that they will put before him. And in any event, he wouldn't want that. He's very concerned about how he is thought of, what the public thinks of him, and he's very concerned about his reputation, such as it is, being sullied. So we'll talk a bit about this idea. It came to my head just yesterday that maybe what they're trying to do, and maybe the reason for Pelosi's posture, is that she knows it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot to convict Donald Trump. It's not easy, it's not hard to convict him based on the information we have received. It seems like a pretty tight case. But the timing is not right, in a way, for a long, drawn-out trial. For one thing, we have the looming presidential race in just a blink of an eye. Candidates, if they are to be successful, will have to get moving with their campaigns. As much as Trump might have committed all these crimes and so forth for which he would be prosecuted, the candidates are not going to be able to easily deal with that. They will be operating under a shadow. And a very popular shadow, we must say. We can't forget that. This possibly could turn around by Trump himself. I mean, they have him on some good points, and he can't escape those points. But those points on public perception is something else. Trump will put together a very impressive campaign to show that he was deliberately sabotaged. These charges were meant to kill his campaign, and he will get a lot of sympathy, even from people who didn't support him before. He could, I'm just saying, he could, if he had, you know, some genius help. So far he hasn't had genius help. He could turn the tide around and go after lots and lots of sympathy. He could wiggle out of the situation. You don't know. On Pelosi's end, she's already made a mistake. She's made a serious mistake in ignoring this case against Trump for years now, going on almost 3 years. She decided she was opposed to a trial on the grounds of impeachment for whatever reason. And even though the party members were pressing for an inquiry, you remember she stayed put. She was firm about it. She wasn't going to go anywhere with it because it would be too traumatic, emotionally traumatic for the country. Yeah, well, in the meantime, Trump was able still to ride through. He got an extra 3 years to get his thing together, because he was not under any threat of indictment, of having to respond to charges, of having to, you know, get documents and evidence and whatnot to submit to the court. He saved himself that much time. He had that much time free because Nancy Pelosi refused to move in a timely fashion and to move in accordance with what the party members wanted. She felt she was the party and she would control everything. So she didn't move on any of the entreaties of the party members, which meant that the party members would have had an additional 2 years. Their campaigns could have started 2 years ago or more. Now they have to begin their campaigns, do their fundraising, and, you know, deal with the business of campaigning to get a seat, either re-elected or to grab themselves a new seat somewhere. They also have to raise money. So it was a terrible waste, a terrible delay, and she is at fault. She did that. Remember, I talked about it. What is the problem? For the sake of, you know, as they call it, optics, for the sake of how it looks, you will ignore practical, pragmatic things that you have to do. Trump was hammering the Democratic Party and has been for the past 2 years, going on three. He has had an advantage. And that in turn gave a lift to other Republican candidates who would choose to run under his umbrella. It's such a simple thing to figure out, really, when you look at it. But they let Trump do his thing. Trump has his way. He can do whatever he wanted. If he felt like obeying an order, he would obey it. If he felt like, making a new, some kind of legislation or something, he would do that. But he didn't feel that way. He kept to his program, strictly to his program. I'm saying we have to look at it the way it is. He had Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Party gave Donald Trump one heck of a gift. And the gift was of time. Trump had extra time. He could stretch out now on his outrageous policies. And he did. And the Democrats looked like a bunch of nooks, just sitting there waiting to see what Trump will do next. That's not the way you run a party. That's not good politics. Okay. So the theory is that I think they will hold on, that's the Democrats, will follow this one line of we're going to go after the president, but not on all these criminal charges that were possible. We're not going to deal with that. We're going to talk strictly about impeachment. And with regard to impeachment, we will deal only with those things that help us make the case for impeachment. And then, removal from office is another thing. We'll get to that. But for right now, we can fully exploit the strength of that word in the public domain, impeach the president. And in the process of impeaching the president, we'll also compel him in public to accede to our demands, to admit certain things that he's not going to admit otherwise. And we will regain the advantage of our strength on the basis of that. So maybe the better thing for us to do is to not proceed with all the other criminal acts, and there are many, but go with those that we absolutely could prove, that we have evidence for, we have good witnesses for, and that we could make a good case for. And in the meantime, we will shore up our defenses for 2020. I think that's what the thinking is, because I look at how the Democratic Party as a party is behaving, and it's not behaving right. It's not acting like a party that is really out to scramble Donald Trump's brains. It's not acting like a party that is out for blood. It's acting like a party, a very well-mannered party, going by the book. We're not trying to cause any additional conflict or anything like that. They know that Donald Trump is a wuss. He talks a big talk, but he really is a coward. How do I know? Well, he will be spending the next couple of days undermining himself just to prove the point that he's in the mood for dialogue and negotiation. All that nasty talk, all that, I'll dig your eyes out if I can, and you know, who he's going to bomb, who is going to do this to, who's going to, all of that stuff. You're not hearing much of it lately, are you? No, we're not. He wants now to paint a different Donald Trump, conducive to the idea of, can't we all just get along and sit around a table and talk? Are our differences so insurmountable that we can't talk about them? He's the reason. He's the man of reason now. What he wants is to get the Republicans to give him a break. And he wants to look like a contrite man who realizes that, well, you know, he made some mistakes. That's all. But this happens in every administration. People make mistakes. So why don't we work on some of the biggest mistakes that my administration has made so far, and let's undo them? He began that today. That kind of talk came out of his mouth today. He says, no more war. He wants no more war with Egypt. He wants no more war in the Middle East. He wants peace. And the people he was just planning on bombing and bombing them into dust, he wants another plan now. And it will be a permanent plan. It would be something that we all could live with forever, because we'll be working for peace. You know, Donald Trump doesn't have a sincere bone in his body. But that's the message I see him crafting, or his people are crafting for him now, as a reasonable guy. Okay, so he made a couple of mistakes. All right. He'll admit to some, not to the ones that could have sent him to jail for 20 years, but he'll admit to some mistakes. These are mistakes not of intent. I was perhaps a little overzealous, and I got wrong advice. But these things happen. But I'm telling you now, there are things I am prepared to do. And I want us all to clear the air of them and move on. That would be a masterstroke if he could achieve that. But nobody believes that Donald Trump means what he says, or says what he means. But I looked at that because the tone has shifted. And the Democrats now seem conciliatory, when they should be, you know, armed with whatever it is that could draw the most blood. Because politically, they have to put him down. They're going to have to put him down. It's the only way to beat Donald Trump, is to proceed with these cases and evidence and argue the courts. And you see how cowardly he is. They asked him, they've been asking him for a while for his tax returns, and he has all kinds of stupid, flimsy excuses as to why he can't turn them over. He's scared, because he knows, if anything, those records would convict him. There's nothing there to expiate anything that he has done, only to indict him with more charges. So we'll talk about that. I'd be interested in your thoughts based on what you know, you read people's attitudes, you listen to what they say, and I'm hearing the sound of reconciliation for some reason. I'm hearing a thought in Donald Trump's mind that he still can pull one off on the Democratic Party and run right through the gate. That they will fall for his act of contrition and his looking ahead for the country and all the things that could lead to progress and peace and democracy for everyone. Yeah, okay. I'm not falling for that. But I thought I'd bring that to your attention. It may not happen tomorrow, but it certainly will happen soon enough. If indeed both sides find a way to negotiate, Pelosi can say, well, we don't need the country in any more turmoil. This is a temporary measure. We see the sense it makes. That doesn't mean we agree with what the president will do every time. But there are certain things that have happened already that, if left undone and unaddressed, will surely sink the country. And now here we are, political enemies we may be, but we're fighting for the good of the country and trying to find a reasonable solution to the morass that we're in. I think something like that might happen. I don't know, but I think so. Princeton Theological Seminary in New Jersey has announced that it will put millions of dollars, $27.6 million to be exact, in a kind of fund that would help students pursue their scholarships and fellowships without stress. These students will, of course, have to prove their link or somehow that they are related to slaves who had helped to build Princeton and presumably properties nearby. But Princeton says that this is a form of reparations, and they're calling it, the dean of students has called it, an act of confession. Okay, so are we to expect in the immediate future an act of contrition? I mean, after you've confessed your sins, you have to demonstrate further how you are going to, in the future, how you're going to make amends. So this, they say, is a $27.6 million kind of reparations and kind of act of contrition. That's not bad. Now, I appreciate, I don't want to sound so immune, but Princeton Theological Seminary, oh, sorry, did I say cemetery? Seminary, come on, Eutrice, you're slipping. But that was funny. It was a a very good thing to do. But if we are serious, it's just like what's her name's apology for announcing herself that she was Cherokee. And she went back and she said how sorry she was that she did that, how misleading it was, and so forth. And if you recall the program that I did, that's not how you apologize. That's not an apology. And we have to be very, very particular when it comes to things like this. We do not expunge the record until you've done all that needs to be done to expunge the record. Partial payment is not an expunging of the record. And it seems to me that Princeton Theological Seminary will have to spell out, because it has records, if it can't do it itself, there are historians, and they can pay for historians to go behind the numbers on books, old books, and so forth, and assemble the truth. What was the truth of Princeton Theological Seminary's relationship with slavery and enslaving people? And it is particularly important because this is a religious institution. But it managed to hide the truth for years. It managed to hide it and lie about it. And simply saying that, well, we're putting $27.6 million in a bucket, and it's like reparations. I think it's a good start that your mind is amenable, that the school is amenable to making some kind of move toward rectifying its own record. But it's not the only thing you do. An apology and the truth are due here. They have to, when you talk about, what is it, 27.6 million, my mind says, well, what is a 27.6 million today, in today's dollars? What did you make in slavery time on the backs of slaves? Has anybody calculated what the worth was of slave labor? What did their labor, their forced labor, and their living under ridiculously harsh circumstances, what was the cost of that? So that we can appreciate, well, 27.6 million sounds like a lot of money. But if it can be shown that the denial of their human rights, the false imprisonments, the denial of their ability to be free citizens and earning their own money, what was that assessed as in terms of value? And what percentage of that value, of what percentage of that value is 27.6 million? Is it adequate? What is it, 10%? 20%, 50%, adding interest, adding all kinds of things that they brought and gave to the college community in terms of free labor, poor living conditions, and so forth. Not to mention the fact that, well, they They didn't have open enrollment, as I recall from my reading, at Princeton Theological Seminary. So it's a nice piece of public relations, and I don't want to sound super cynical. It is about time that they openly admit that this is a foundational part, slavery, a foundational part of this institution. And that, especially as a religious institution, they are obligated to undo the damage done for generations. But it must be a just and right. It must be a good compensation. It must be done right. It must be accompanied by open admissions about the role of slavery. How does a religious institution teaching about God How does a religious institution work itself out of centuries of enslavement of people of African descent? Well, we'll take a break here. Oh, we don't need to take a break. You can call in. We've gone past our half hour time. So we'll take questions as fast as you can call them in at 888-874-4888 on the two subjects introduced so far. One is the Democratic Party's Nancy Pelosi, is she sending signals that they want some kind of a negotiated settlement at this point with Donald Trump? Are they considering the possibility of making amends for the sake of the country? And secondly, in the case of Princeton Theological Seminary, what are the things that should be considered when an institution like this, enmeshed as so many institutions were in the history of race oppression in this country, how do you begin to weigh what the penalty should be for that? If you want to absolve yourself from the past, what is to be considered in arriving at some kind of a bottom line that would be amenable to the community? You have any idea? 888-874-4888. Well, I see people don't want to talk about Nancy Pelosi and whether they're getting ready to, or even entertaining by now, some idea of deal-making that could set the country back on its tracks, save it from a lot of needless suffering, and put it on the road to healing, and we'll deal with Donald Trump some other way, which will be determined. But for now, it looks like it's going to be way too onerous for the Republicans to take on the challenge, the full challenge of dealing with Donald Trump and the nation after that. For dealing with Donald Trump. What are your ideas? What are you thinking? All right, let's do a little music and we come right back and talk to you. listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about two things. And one of them, the first topic, really just kind of crossed my mind yesterday. And I was wondering, from the signals I'm reading, something is happening that hasn't been announced yet. And for some reason, it led me to believe that there might be an effort to, for the moment, to make a deal to put off this whole impeachment thing until another time. But in the meantime, it will give Trump an opportunity to basically get out of the hole a little bit. And Pelosi, it would validate her view that she had thought about the impeachment campaign, which is underway, as you know, and she was right. It will severely fracture the country, and we don't need it right now. So would the grown-ups come to the table and say, let's come up with something where we don't have to deal with this the way it is going right now? We can reframe it and re-present it at another time, but we will still keep in the public eye that we do intend to challenge the president, so it becomes something slightly different from what it is now. He's not going to be the crook. He's not going to be the gangster. He's not going to be the Trump we know. And we will have a different kind of conversation, because we'll be dealing with different levels of involvement. People like former Mayor Giuliani, who is a Trump advisor and is seen now as having played a major role in several things that have gone awry. Is that a possibility? I don't know, but it crossed my mind. And I thought, well, it's worth asking. It's worth asking and talking about and seeing what people think. And the second thing that I talked about today is the announcement by Princeton Theological Seminary that they will be putting millions of dollars, $27.6 million, as a matter of fact, in the form of a reparations program. And that program would afford free college education, scholarships, and so forth to descendants of enslaved people. And I'm saying, okay, that's a good idea that you want to do that. But at this point, we need a deeper approach. We need to define things. We need to put a value on all these things that we normally don't consider. What is the value of the contribution of African slaves to not just Princeton, but in the adjoining areas and so forth? Put a value to it, and then we see whether the $27.6 million, what it amounts to, you know, in terms of a ratio. Is it a good ratio? And we should further go on to documenting the role of Africans in developing the area. What is the cost of that? And other costs that are normally hidden. We don't talk about free labor, the denial of rights that could have afforded them a decent life. Working for free is not, it's always taken for granted. Well, we just come up with a number. No, we have to be precise now. We have to be very, very precise. So what is your thinking? Or is it that you're on strike today? You're not thinking at all. You decide, I'm not thinking. I'm just not going to think about anything. We have a number of leftover topics, which we will get to tomorrow from last week. But these topics are related to ones that we started out with this week, and I thought we should finish that and come back to the larger topics as we go. It is very interesting when you look at this issue that we are experiencing. And the idea is that it is conveyed as what is happening in Congress to the president. No, we have to think of it also as what is happening to us, what is happening to our concept of governance. Moki from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Greetings.
Hello.
Greetings. How are you today?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
The same. And I guess everybody else is too in the listening audience, in the community.
So, since we don't have very much time left, let's get to your point.
Yeah, I wasn't going to call in, but no one else has, so I think that Pelosi and Trump are cut from the same cloth. I believe that the Democrats, Democrats, are more in fear of Tulsi Gabbard than the Republicans.
The polling is showing. She is very low in the polls at the moment. So low that it would be considered way out of the park for somebody to consider her as a viable candidate in the race right now.
Yeah, same thing to her as they did to Ralph Nader. Same thing as they did to Jill Stein. It's a pretty common tactic. Hillary, her team has already anticipated Ms. Gabbard going independent, although Tulsi says she's not going to. She's committed to healing the Democratic Party, to, you know, renewing it. But Hillary's people are thinking, let's head her off. Let's get this Russiagate, Russia bot thing going. Hillary's very strong on that. She sees Tulsi as the only real, as one of the main obstacles to her last-minute entrance into the race. You did mention Giuliani. I'm just skipping a little bit, but really getting back to the thread that you were weaving here. I think Trump is going to throw Giuliani under the bus. And I'd be very happy about that, because I think there's a lot more to be known about Rudy Giuliani in connection with the events surrounding 9/11. So I don't know how on point I'm staying here, but I really think that the Democrats, including Pelosi, they love Trump. It's part of the Kabuki theater and the game of mass, the weapon of mass distraction. Trump's going to, they're going to let him go. They're going to let him off because he's better for them than someone like the example of Tulsi Gabbard. They're just so in fear of Tulsi rocking the boat. So the polls are all fudged. Tulsi's determined to run as a Democrat. And I say more power to her for that. But my feeling has always been that she should have gone independent right away, given how she's been betrayed before, following Bernie Sanders' betrayal for the nomination in 2016. There's a lot of momentum gathering around Tulsi Gabbard. So she's my hope for the future. She's the only reason I might vote in this this, you know, one party election. Can I move on to the second topic, or do you want to let someone else have a crack at that?
Well, you can move on.
All right, so the 26 point something million is for education. That's the approach they're going to take. I think they must encourage anyone who wants free education in the in their community. I don't know about the state of New Jersey, but all of those who come on board for their scholarship should be paid to go to school. Because you, if you're worried about all the other bills besides your tuition, you're not going to perform well as a student. So they've got to cover all the bases. They have to support, they have to go out into the community and find every single way they can to enrich the community around this, the university.
I don't know that is even doable at this point, but it's
not just
you greet the news with, you know, it's a pleasant announcement, but there's still very serious business to be conducted behind it. And that's what we have to insist now. We have to insist that the records be squared.
Yes.
Therefore, that is the other part of the obligation that Princeton Theological Seminary has to the community. Well, we've run out of time. Thanks so much for contributing. And we'll see each other tomorrow, folks, at the same time. Bye-bye.